Hey folks, I'm Alka Cook from the Intel Open Source Technology Center, and I'm going to be presenting you a project that we've been working on for the last half year that has been developed in my team at Intel to replace one of the components that was part of the original Tizen project and has been, I would personally say, the biggest eyesore that Tizen internally had. Don't laugh too loud. Some of you may know about it. The base component, let's start with a little introduction of what we're actually doing here. Some quick assumptions for those in the room. And by the way, there's so few people here, which I absolutely don't mind. If you don't get it, just walk up here, slap me in the face, say, sorry, you need to explain this again. There's not many witnesses. I don't hold any grudge. So assumptions for this talk is you do something with the Tizen platform software. You're probably not an application developer or someone who does HTML5 apps, or you're interested in working with Tizen and bringing it up on new hardware, that kind of person. Most likely, you are a software developer or a platform integrator. Maybe you're a person who is making products by themselves, kind of like an indie shop. I also kind of expect people to come to this talk that already know what vconf is. So does everybody know what vconf is? Have you heard of it? Yes? No? Everybody nods? Everybody screams? Good. Exactly. And important as for this talk is you kind of should understand why vconf is bad, because we're not in the process at Intel of doing fun work just because it's fun. We're actually doing it because we think it's meaningful and we'll actually develop some new technology that in the long run will make Tizen and actually all open source projects better. So why Buxton again? Well, so back to vconf, what did it actually do? It just provided key value pair of configuration data to a whole bunch of services that Tizen is built out of. And that's great because we don't want everything in et cetera folders scattered over disk in unstructured data that cannot be reproduced or copied or inspected. So we need some place to actually store data, and the data is going to change over sometimes minutes or hours or weeks or years, but it will change. So it's not read-only data. It's actually regularly changing. We need this data to be treated like it is valuable. It needs to be secured. Privacy considerations need to be taken into account when we develop a system for this. We cannot just have everybody give access to everything, because based on personal settings or preferences that users may set, you can profile the user or figure out stuff about them, even though they're not directly disclosing information. You'll be able to fingerprint the data. We don't want that. We also obviously want this thing, this storage system, to be fast and lightweight, not megabytes of memory to do some really large database. We also do not want an SQL or even SQLite database backend, because they tend to be large and very expensive to commit back to disk. Plus, they may require more memory to actually maintain. And we obviously want this to be very flexible. We don't want to provide any hard guidelines to application developers that are going to use it. We want them to be able to use it in a way that they see fit. So it must actually be really simple to extend it, to add new data types to it if they want to. It must be pluggable. They must be able to change components in it. And obviously, they have been using a system before called vconf, and we want people to use some of the basic things that they were able to do with vconf, which is, now, the simple things that you do with configuration data. You store it, you retrieve it, and if it changes, you get a notification. And basic security principles that were present in vconf, you want to be able to use as well. So we set out over a year ago to start architecting a solution. I talked to a lot of senior architects at Intel and asked them, if you would do this again, what would you do? Because we can write something from scratch, but maybe we're stupid and we should just take something that's already out there on the market. So we looked very closely at alternatives. Gconf and dconf immediately came up because they're the two big ones used in the Linux desktops. There's obvious alternatives to do a whole database that already exists and just take it and use it, but that has other big issues. So we had to come up with a new solution. We came up with a wish list of things that we absolutely wanted to have in Buxton. We wanted to make it small and fast, and so we opted to keep it single-threaded, written in C, which comes as close as you can get it, but also keeps it relatively small, which is very important. We want to be able to run this as a core component on every single Tizen installation, including the smallest ones that are out there. We are making a socket-based service for configuration data. That's probably a shocker to many people. Unless you know how dconf actually is designed, you probably are in the assumption that most configuration data software just accesses files on disks. And one of the biggest problems with that is that if you have a file on disk, that it has file access permissions. And once you have access to the file, you have access to the whole file. There's nothing preventing you from opening the file and parsing every single string in there and doing something with it. So we realized that was a no-go. Now, dconf has a hybrid model where you can actually do writes over dbus to it. But in essence, the file is still entirely unprotected. So that was obviously not a good fit because we wanted to make sure that one system application could not write or touch the other system application's data. And one user cannot access or write other user's data. So we put everything behind a socket, and it works really well. We included systemd socket activation, so we actually have a good fail-safe method of starting this up as early as we can in boot time. As soon as an application requests data from Buxton, Buxton will automatically be started, which also means that we can do a lot of lazy initialization. Unless the application actually starts to get keys, the data won't actually be read from disk. Buxton is just sitting there and saying, I'm ready for your request. We obviously want to store arbitrary data, but we provide a few basic data types that everybody can use. And Tizen heavily has built its security model around SMAC, and we must honor the SMAC policy. We do not want to invent a SMAC policy ourselves. We want to actually use the policy that was actually already in place. So Buxton actually reuses the SMAC policy and verifies that when someone accesses a key, that it has the right permissions in the SMAC policy table in the kernel to do so. All right, let's go into the structure of the data. First big concept in Buxton that's really new for everybody is that you can have multiple providers of the same key. And we call those providers, we call them layers. I didn't come up with a better name to describe, but these layers are, as you can imagine, are layered on top of each other, and the one that's on top has the highest priority. And if you request a key that is present in two layers, then you're going to get the value back from the layer that's the highest. This sounds really simple, and it is, in fact, in code, it is extremely simple, but it does mean that we need to go and look through all the layers to make sure that permission to actually read the key is not denied by one of these layers. So there's a little bit of an involvement to actually implement this. So multiple layers doesn't necessarily mean that you can just go and use hundreds of layers. That's discouraged. But what it does allow you to do is have, for instance, a set of basic defaults that just ship with your product. And you can layer on top of those a set of preferences that you yourself have added to it. And then on top of those, the user can say, I want my own values for these and these keys. And if that's allowed, he can do that. And a secondary user can have its own layer of preferences. So we've made a very powerful system to do multi-user and to do it very flexibly, where I can change everybody's desktop background unless that user has chosen their own desktop background. Because if I change the default, all users will see that value. So these layers, the layers are actually a database table in essence. We use backend storage plugins that plug into Buxton. They're part of the source code that can be external. They're just dynamically loadable modules that provide the method for storing this layer data onto disk. The ones that we implemented ourselves and our team are a GDBM backend and a memory hash table. GDBM is an extremely nice database backend for arbitrary key value data, which means that both the key and the value can be arbitrary data. They can be infinite length. They can have zero characters in them, both in the key and in the value. And we can use that for very good reasons. A nice thing about GDBM also is that, in essence, it's a memory-mapped database application with some good, especially single-threaded performance characteristics because of that. It has a relatively reliable design and implementation. It's been well debugged, and it's been used in open source for many, many years. The memory hash table is a very simple hash table that, as soon as Buxton exits, will be lost. You can use it as a test database. And if you look at the performance characteristics of both those backends, they're actually almost identical unless you start accessing many different keys on disk. They perform actually very closely. So we already talked a little bit about the layers and their priority. And users can have their own layers. I can maybe show the configuration file that shows them. All right. So everything in a layer is stored as a key value pair, which is an internal concept. GDBM knows key values. For the convenience, we actually use the key values that go into this backend to define some structure. It's obviously really hard to work for a software programmer if you have hundreds of configuration bits that have no structure to them and don't define any coherency. So we made a distinguishment of defining what we call groups, which are technically directories, and keys. And Buxton combines them into a single key that goes into the backend, so we can actually go and create kind of like virtual folders and assign permission to these folders so that we can say, well, some users can access these folders. Some users can create new keys inside folders, inside groups. And then inside of those go the keys, and the keys will actually have the real values in them. So here's a simple little example of what you could do with these layers. We've just defined three hypothetical layers. At the bottom is the base layer. We have an ISP layer. And then we have a user layer that's per user. So one user will actually have a different layer than another user. So for instance, a user who wants to have a default background image setting, he could be getting a default value provided by the base layer, which could be the Tizen layer, for instance, and the Tizen desktop background. The ISP could say, but I want all my devices to have this really cool AT&T or Verizon or Vonage or whatever your telephone provider is background and get it from this and this location. And put that layer on a device with a bunch of extra settings and thereby provide the users with kind of like a telco experience on their own phones really quickly. And then a user obviously could choose their own, but desktop background. For a different scenario, you can also use these layers to deny access to certain types of clients, if you wish, or override user values. And a camera click sound is one of those things where ISPs may say, you must always make a click sound when you use the camera in these and these countries, because it's required by law, and in different countries not. So you can actually provide a different value for that. So from the application point of view, and now I'm actually talking about the ties and platform applications, the data is stored according to this organization. Obviously, there's a value end of it, but everything is in a layer. In those layers, you have groups, and in those groups, you can have keys. And once you request a layer plus group plus key, you will get a value back. If you do not provide the layer, then the system is going to give you the value of the group plus key combination that has the highest priority and where present. So go back to the previous slide. If I'm asking for the value of the background image in the base layer, I've now said, give me the base layer value of background image, I'm going to get the one that's in the bottom. But if I don't provide it, I may get the value from one of the higher ones. All right, now to add security to this, we've integrated smack labels into the property of the key itself. And so when you access a key, the system is going to check that you as an accessor actually have valid access to this key. But we have some methods so that we can actually change the label of this key, which is obviously needed. And there will be a default label in case you don't assign one, which means that then technically only the root user or the system domain will be able to access your keys. These are the data types that we have created that made the most sense. Obviously, strings, they're going to be the most popular. The integers, signed, unsigned, 32-bit, 64-bit. Floats and double, the Boolean for toggles, really useful. And just a little footnote on the strings. So everybody knows strings, and they can be a virtual thing. You can be talking about a string in a libc context or something else. In this case, Buxton calls them strings, but they're technically arbitrary data pointers. You can put any type of no characters inside a string and say, my string is 100 bytes long, and just give 100 bytes of zeros. It will just accept it just fine. Buxton does not look at the contents of values. It trusts that you have verified the data. Manipulating the data, obviously, you know, we store the data, you get a return value back, we retrieve the data, you get a return value back, and you can subscribe to notifications. That means that you can tell the system that in case these keys change or in case the value of this request changes for me, I get a notification. And that means that one user can ask for the same notification as another user. And in case some key changes, one user may actually get the notification and the other one may not get the notification because for the second user, the actual resulting value hasn't changed, but for the first one, it has. All right, I already talked a little bit about permissions and manipulating data, allowing developers to create different system values with priorities, multi-user, things that can be turned off. I'm going to talk a little bit now about the actual API, just to show you guys what it looks like in the bare metal. So Buxton is a very basic API. It's not very, dressed up or made cute. It's pretty verbose. You have to do your own error checking. You will get a file descriptor back in case you're using some of the functions that return them. You get a handle to the Buxton connection. The handle is a file descriptor, and you can use it in your own pull loop. So a simple Buxton initiation starts like this. You create a Buxton client object, and you get a file descriptor back. And any events that come in over this file descriptor, you will be able to catch and pass on through a notification handler or an asynchronous request that you may have issued. So you can actually queue multiple requests at once, wait for data to come back, and then handle them all one by one. Every key in Buxton needs a key object. Again, it's just a handle. You register it with exactly the type. The layer is optional. The group and the key name are obviously not optional. And at the end, you will have to destroy this object yourself. This is fairly standard for a lot of low-level C APIs. So then the basic code flow to get a value back, I'm showing you the asynchronous version, is to call the Buxton library and issue a request to the Buxton daemon. So the first four lines on top are issuing this request to the server. And at that point, the function will just return, and no value has actually been gotten for you. You will now need to poll on the file descriptor and wait for data to come back from the server. Now, you'll see the false in the second line at the end. And this false actually says, wait in the background for me. If you change it into true, it becomes a synchronous event, and then you can omit the poll loop that I've omitted here for brevity, but how that works should be fairly trivial. After you receive a poll on the file descriptor, you actually need to go in and look at the data that the Buxton server has sent back to you. So we have a prototype function, Buxton client handle response, that actually goes and looks at the data and does the right thing for you to what's in there. But you can also provide it with your own client callback function, which is this example. And that function is then used to look at the data that Buxton sent to you and make sense out of it. In this case, the callback function is actually what puts the value into this G value integer for you. And at that point, you've actually successfully retrieved the data. Similarly, for setting a key, you've got pretty much the exact same code base here. Of course, when you're setting it, you already know what the value is, so there's no sense in actually looking at the data because you already have it. This callback function is relatively simple. It just inspects the data pointer that you were getting, puts the right data in the right bits for you, and then you are on your own to use the memory address that was given to you for your own data storage and put the result in there. In this case, we knew we were getting a 32-bit integer value, and we're just throwing it back into our memory register that corresponds to the address of this G value bit that was used in this slide all the way in the second line. That's right on top here. This address right here will be used. So this is a little bit more verbose than people that have actually looked at vconf yet. Notifications, by the way, follow pretty much the same scheme. And we have over, I think, 25 man pages giving code examples for every single usage that you can do. It's really quite a well-documented little library already. And most of this code is pretty similar to what's in the manual pages. Notifications are essentially the same as a get value, except that you have this callback function which may be able to get more data back. And afterwards, you obviously want to unregister notifications. I just threw in a couple of slides here as I'm wrapping up to kind of show you what you'd need to do to actually convert an existing application. Well, you first want to start by linking against libbuxton, which is the client-side library that does all the interaction with the Buxton daemon for you. And you probably need to set up some key, and that basically means that you need to know what layer you want to put your values in and what your permissions are going to be for this key. And that's dependent on what kind of device you're building. So I can't give a good answer to this. We've created some default values and a default security policy for Buxton, but people will need to be able to do this for their own device that they're programming for. Needless to say, we're making one that should apply to Tizen Mobile and Tizen IVI. But you may actually wish to create your own domain. So you need to look and see what you want to do here if you do this. This is an example we did for the Tizen lock screen application. And of course, so we define a group for the lock screen. We create this key And we put a value in there by default in a package so that when the application starts for the first time, it starts in the right state, and there is a key with the right permissions already there. And then we just basically, I'm just picking kind of like the meet function of this conversion out there. We go from a simple vconf set int with a preprocessor symbol that just points to the right vconf string that allows the vconf library to find the right one with the right value and change it all to the things that we need to do in this case to actually set a new value for this key. In this case, we're doing a synchronous event, so this function call buxton_set_value will just wait until Buxton actually has returned a value, and then we just need to quickly check the status. Unlike vconf, which has some error checking, but it's not very widely used, Buxton really depends on you making sure that everything went okay. We do have a pretty reliable daemon, but you could always run into some issues. So always check your error codes. I've reached the end of my presentation here. I can show you how Buxton works, but it's pretty boring. The only thing that maybe is interesting for folks is to kind of see what kind of performance aspect that Buxton has. And what I've done is we've created a little timing tool that actually just runs about 100,000 iterations for each data type, and you can see what kind of a return response round trip time we have for each request. So these requests are actually going after each other. It's requesting a value, waiting for the response, and then returning back. It's now throttling my CPU, so my response times are going slightly up. But as you can see, the average round trip time for a simple request is in the order of 17 to 18 microseconds. There's some variation on the system because it's in low power mode, which results in about 60,000 requests per second or something like that for this Ivy Bridge system. Even on a mobile ARM chipset, this should still be doing many, many thousand requests per second, which should hopefully make people very, very happy. We are now migrating most of Tizen to this system. I'll be working throughout the summer with four people to do this change. Obviously, Samsung folks can come help out with this if they want. And they've been very good at giving us feedback and working with us to improve the code. And with that, I'd like to ask people questions if they have. Thank you all for coming. And I hope you enjoy the rest of the conference. Thank you very much.